Thank you very much for talking to me today. You're one of the people who signed a letter from the Australians for AI safety following the Minister Ed Husic's rather optimistic approach to AI and the letter that was sent out by the chief scientist. Can you give my listeners an understanding of what your concerns are?
The concerns are that there's a lot of things, I guess, we don't know about emerging AI trends. Our concerns sit around things like AI alignment. So, trying to ensure that these systems align to what it is best aligned to humanity and what we want in our lives and society and what people want as they live their lives. Because these systems have the ability to. Or potentially have the ability to take some of our own control away, or feel like that they can take that control away to automate those processes in whatever way. So, trying to ensure that these systems align, these systems will be making lots of decisions about lots of different things that we might do in our lives and be able to interrogate those systems so that we can actually understand why it's doing. Or suggesting what it's suggesting, rather than just have it come up with that suggestion.
I suppose we should really get into some explanations, really, because there's different types of AI, aren't there? Like
Yes.
there's this the narrow AI that's deals with specific actions, while then there's general AI, and that's not the same thing at all.
No, they're quite different concepts. And look, the vast majority of any AI that anybody's going to encounter at the moment is narrow AI. That is, it's created to fulfill a particular and very specific task. And it can do that task really well in some cases. And in some cases, it will do that task better than people. But these are not general AI systems. And a general AI system is capable of operating across multiple different problems, types of problems, different types of perceiving the environment, so visual or audio or text or so forth. And so they might perceive the world in different ways as well. And it should be able to process that and solve problems that are more general, not relating to a specific task. Also identify what that task is going to be and then apply the correct way of doing that.
Yeah, so that's what your actual expertise is in, isn't it? Multiple vectors, effectively.
So my area is in what's called multi-objective, which is not it is still narrow AI in the sense that it's dealing with applying solving one particular task generally, but it considers that that task has multiple issues that we might want to consider. So when you hop in the car, you might say, I want to get to my destination as fast as possible. But that doesn't mean I want to take risks with my life or pedestrians' lives. So there's these ulterior things that we don't actually specify, but if it was to break them, we wouldn't be happy. So they're almost unwritten rules in the background that we might also have. And so this is where the alignment comes in. We want to make sure that even though the person may not have actually said this is a requirement, it should realize that there are the requirements that it needs to at least consider and mitigate damage in
And
those things.
that's an intriguing concept, isn't it? Human alignment problem.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the human alignment problem is humans don't specify well. What it is we want. We might specify the very specific thing we want, and we think we're clear about that, but we don't necessarily specify all the things we don't want. And that can confuse an AI. So,
Bit like Aladdin, isn't it? I mean, all those fairy tales where they say you've
yes.
got 10 wishes.
Yes. And look, there's even a clip from this from, I think it's Fantasia, where Mickey Mouse casts a spell or something, and then it gets out of hand because it's not actually what it wanted.
Magician's Apprentice with
Yes, that's the one.
the sweeping brooms.
Yes, that's the one. And that's sort of the classic thing. We say we want this, but that's not actually what we want. We've got these hidden things we want. And another example that a more real world example that I've sometimes used is capitalism. Capitalism is very much focused on, it's got this objective, which is to try and make money. What we don't consider is that they're simply making money doesn't necessarily align to everything that people might want. And we've seen through history that there's been lots of cases where capitalism or pure capitalism causes problems. And so people have to start creating rules to try and stop that. So whether or not that's slavery or corporate greed or monopolies or whatever the different situation is, we've had governments come up with legislation that tries to prevent capitalists from doing particular things. And the reason is because what those companies were doing was not aligned to what society wants. And
That's right.
we've ended up with this massive library of law, and people become specialists in law, specifically in corporation law. And I expect we need something similar in an AI sense, that we need to have a body of law that constrains what AI potentially can do, or ensures that that AI is operating in a way that agrees with what society values and what we want.
I mean, I found it interesting to when I was looking up about being precise about what AI is, that it's actually, as is described in that rather interesting group that you're part of, which is the Future of Life Institute. AI is about intelligence, but it's not about feelings,
No, definitely
which
not about
is.
feelings.
Feelings, yeah. And just to read from the Future of Life Institute, we believe that the way powerful technology is developed and used will be the most important factor in determining the prospects for the future of life. I mean, that's a huge statement, isn't it?
It is. And it's entirely correct, in that decisions about how we're going to live are going to be directly affected, and already is, by AI. A lot of the AI that people encounter now, one, they often don't know they're encountering it, but it is already affecting their lives. If you look at simple algorithms used in TikTok recommendation methods, or what appears in your Twitter feed, and how these things will actually affect you personally, these things are driven by rather simple AI algorithms, but they've shown that they change people's behavior. Although there are also instances where people specifically deliberately do things to train the AI into the things that they want to see as well. So it does go both ways, but these things have the effect of potentially changing human behavior. And
Oh,
we
yeah.
want to make sure that either everybody agrees that it should be changing our behavior in a particular way. That's unlikely you get any agreement on that. And I think this is where these algorithms, that they're not necessarily designed to change our behavior. So TikTok recommendation algorithms are not designed to change people's behavior necessarily. They're designed to simply maximize clicks, which is a change of behavior, but they just want to.
They're amplifying the commercial imperative. That's what they're doing.
That's right. That's right. And that's what all of these methods have been about for years, is to try and increase that commercial imperative. It's just that that's been done with data mining and AI now.
That's right.
To some
And
extent, it's been done for a while.
but it's important because, like you say, I mean, those really irritating things where they decide what ad you're going to get and all those kind of things, down to the point where they know exactly what kind of, like, I bought a pair of shoes and now I'm getting Puma ads, you know what I mean?
Yes.
That sort of thing. I mean, I didn't ask for
No,
it.
no.
But anyway, by the by.
Hopefully one day they'll get smarter and go, well, you've already bought the pair of shoes, but now you need the matching pair of socks. So
Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Like you say, they don't actually, they're not intended necessarily to change people's decision-making processes, but in some cases they are. Like there's an erosion of democratic processes potentially, aren't there? With this kind of narrowing the paths through which people are streamed in a intellectual way.
There can be. So there's certainly been work within the AI community around nudging and nudging people to change their opinion about things, that you can actually push people in particular directions. This has obviously been done, I guess, mostly from a marketing point of view. If we can drive people towards what we want to sell them, then that saves us creating the product they want. We can just make them want the product we've got.
And also, if you repeat something over and over and over, like when the last election, during when Morrison was returned to power, for example, if you went on to YouTube, there were these endless anti-Chinese ads that were centered around getting votes for one of the more right-wing parties. And it was a deluge. It was quite interesting. I didn't realize until I actually wanted something from YouTube to realize that this will be affecting some people over and above others. But you know that, and that's based on an algorithm. Also, the business about anti-vax information that was amplified, and when it was actually tracked back, it was tracked back to about 28 people in the entire world, which was quite fascinating, which is an example of
And
this.
if people know how to influence others, and there's certainly lots of people that are very good at this, you can certainly push large groups of people into whichever direction you want to push them. And AI is certainly a tool that's capable of amplifying that.
Yeah, but it's not because it's immoral, because it has no morals.
No, it's got no morals and doesn't care.
It doesn't care.
And this is why, I guess, I mean, I'd like to see more discussion in the legal sense. I think governments around the world are a long, long way behind. There's certainly lots of stuff that is happening in the background. And look, this letter submitted to the federal government is the federal government looking at this problem. But we're still years behind of probably where we should be. The field is moving very quickly in the way that it affects things. And generative AI methods now, the text generation and so forth, is going to have an effect on a number of different areas, I guess. And yet we still have no legislation or rules around how these things are rolled out.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, the generative AI has led to this whole discussion about how originally it was believed that AI was going to affect blue collar workers. But of course, generative AI is a direct attack on the work of white collar workers, isn't it?
And I mean, I've always been a little fascinated with a lot of conversations around things like creative areas and so forth, as well as creative areas will be safe from AI. And I mean, there's been work as early as the 80s which showed that these systems could create pieces of art that people couldn't even tell were AI generated. So there's certainly no reason why it can't generate creative and original pieces of art.
You know, but that begs the question, of course, what's the point? I mean, it always
Well,
begs the question, what's the point?
for me at home to have a painting done and big painting done and put on my wall, it was going to cost me $8,000 to have someone do it, but I might be able to have an AI generate it for and have it printed up for a much cheaper price, and then I get a piece of art on my wall. No, I
Yeah.
don't need to tell anyone it's AI generated in my house. I
Yeah,
mean,
yeah.
sure, for the people in the museum, it's they don't want it, but in my house, I don't necessarily may not care who the artist was. I just want something on my wall.
Well, that's funny you should say that because I've got a printmaker sister who says that when she was talking to someone about this, when they build a building and they need to fill it up, they only want pictures of a particular dimension. They're not too, they don't really care about what's in the picture, as long as it's just the right dimensions. Yeah. That's
Well,
right.
we wanted something for our wall, and we went, well, this is the color scheme of the room, so we want something with this list of colors. We have a very specific list of colors. Didn't care what the painting was a painting of. It just had to have these colors. So.
Yeah, that's right. Now, let's get to the business of what you think important in this letter. I mean, originally it was about recognize the risk because Edhusic was actually implying that people were just scaremongering when it comes to requiring a framework. The impression
Look,
was
there
that he
certainly
was.
is scaremongering, but that doesn't mean there isn't requirement of a framework. So there's been a few letters sent out, and there was one, I think, OpenAI CEO and some others that did appear to be more scaremongering than anything else. And I don't think scaremongering is constructive, in the sense that, from my viewpoint, we're not going to have an iRobot apocalypse type thing occur. But where there is a risk, there is still a risk that an AI system that is built to fulfill a particular function, but has access to more areas of the world than necessarily required for that, can potentially, in achieving that, have a much wider impact than what we expect. Some people certainly express some concern. Well, if this is in our weapon systems, it could actually create conflicts and so forth. And I agree, that's where you've still got potential risks. There's actually an interesting little short movie film released by Future of Life Institute, which tries to show how human in the loop AI is actually still a problem. So one of the big things in research at the moment for the last few years has been this human, what's called human in the loop, which is the AI works out what the right thing to do is, but it doesn't press the final button to make it happen. And it instead presents that to a user and says, hey, this is what I think you should do in this situation, and provides the button for the person to agree or disagree with doing that. So the human's there, and the human makes the final decision, but it's highly dependent on whether or not the human has the information required to be able to make that decision. The AI might be pulling together a huge amount of sources of information in making that recommendation. We don't have methods to adequately explain why it's recommending the recommendation and know that it's providing that explanation in a truthful and honest representation of that information, and that we know that that information isn't biased in any way, then we can make a decision. But actually, the systems that actually allow us to provide all of those details aren't really there. A neural network that analyzes a whole bunch of data is impossible even for an expert to understand why it's made the decision. We actually need to develop the techniques to do this. And that's sort of been one of the thrusts over the last few years, is to try and develop these methods that allow the system to explain or be more transparent with why it's making the decisions. But I think there's a long way to go. It's still quite a difficult problem. The person still needs to be an expert within those areas that those explanations are coming from. Yet, as portrayed in this particular movie, short film, if a human's got to make a quick decision based on that AI recommendation, how do we know that they're actually making the right decision? People will tend to just agree with a system that gives them the right decision. And there's been experiments done on this.
I was just going to say because people have a we've been educated, I think, as a general rule, to defer to the computer or a scientific, in inverted commas, a gleaned outcome, believing that it's superior. I think probably once people started to read and write, there was a belief that reading and writing was superior to oral history, for example. Do you know?
Yes.
A technology has that kind of glamour.
It does. And in some instances, it's quite possibly correct. It's in lots of cases, it is summing together the best solution for the question that's been asked. The question is, was that the right question to ask it? Is it providing a recommendation on the right thing that we actually want to know? And is it considering all the other objectives that we forgot to tell it were important and the possible consequences of that decision? So an AI system is not necessarily going to be able to take into consideration the consequences, what it could if it's been programmed for that. And this is why the systems need to be developed to ensure that, for instance, it understands the consequence of a particular recommendation if that recommendation is followed.
It should be a tool. It shouldn't be the end. That's what you're saying. It should be a tool.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We've seen this with AI systems in the stock market. An AI system in the stock market might go, well, the best thing for me to do at this point is to buy or to sell because of these parameters. But it's not necessarily factoring in, well, if everybody uses the same method and we all generate the same outcome, then this is going to be the outcome is going to be a stock market crash, even though that wasn't ever something that was going to happen, but it's something that the AI can actually generate to occur. And so we actually get micro crashes and so forth that can occur. And so people have to start writing in systems that find these potential things occurring beforehand and kind of manually stop it from happening. What I guess I and my interpretation of Future of Life and others are saying is, rather than wait until we've got these problems occurring, we need to actually try and identify how we're going to solve those problems, identify the problems and how we're going to go about solving those problems now, before we start getting more significant problems.
Yeah, I understand. Occurring. Yeah. Understand its limitations. I was really interested in the thing about the black box, what's happening in Singapore, how it's got a government investigation into creating a interrogation of logarithms. So that there was a creation of an environment of transparency. You see that as important, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. So I think it's really important that, and there's a number of groups around the world that are looking at transparency and how to do that. And there's several levels to that, how we actually try and do that. We've probably gone through a period of time where we've been just trying to interpret the data. But there's certainly a lot more work in how that data affects the decision. What are the factors that we're considering in that data, whether or not that data has bias built within it, and really being able to interrogate these concepts so that we can actually have more confidence in these systems.
You go to the point where you think that there should be an AI commission or a whole infrastructure.
Oh, yeah.
Similar to the idea of the aeronautics area. And you see that as being just a very practical approach, right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, my view is at the Australian government level is probably not enough. I think it needs to be at an international level, but or we'd probably get is an Australian level. But we certainly need to be able to interrogate the systems and understand whether or not those systems are doing both what they say they're doing, but that they're also not having any significant effect on things that we don't want them having an effect on. Most software development systems will, you can include testing methods to make sure they're actually doing what we say they're doing, but we need to actually be showing that they're not doing something we didn't intend them to be doing as well.
Well, yeah, of course. And of course, there's been, you know, the thing about the cars that can run by themselves, there's been accidents. And then there was Boeing's aeroplane that crashed, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd still say that they're first order problems in that they're not doing what they were asked to do. But for instance, in a system that is going to have side effects on the way other people or systems behave. So, autonomous cars that are all going to behave in a particular way might affect other drivers, for instance, or other road users, even though that's not something that's particularly important to the car itself. to the people that design that car. It's not one of the things they're going to test for. But as a society, we wouldn't want all of these systems, for instance, let's say, for instance, it's entirely hypothetical, but the AI finds that it's safer to make sure it drives around other AI cars and not human-driven cars. So they drive in a block and block out other people from using a section of road just so that they, because they can't predict what the people are going to do, so we just keep them off the road and block them out. So that would not be an intended behavior of the system as a whole, but the system might learn to do something like that.
Well, it would seem terribly logical.
Because it reduces their accidents. So let's do that. So.
You think that the government should actually be funding universities, Australian universities, to actually work on this particular area of safety?
Yes. So one of my concerns would be, Australia can set up areas of national interest and focus areas where, and have specific schemes to try and fund research. At the moment, there's not a large number of people that there's a few more now working in transparency and that sort of thing, but there's certainly a lot of areas here that are not being well researched that we really need research to be covering. Competing against every other scheme, it doesn't allow us to encourage people to switch to be researching this area. Mm. And I think it's an area that we could be leaders in. It's the same across the world. There's increasingly some people starting to look at these areas, but it's certainly an area that Australia needs to be focusing a lot more on. Australia does some great research in particular areas. One thing the public might not be aware is that different countries tend to have research focuses in different areas of AI. And if we're not covering funding within these aspects, then we're not going to be able to cover the algorithms that Australia probably specializes a little bit more than other countries. So certainly better funding and better legislative frameworks for us to be operating in. And just one of them is just without a legislative framework within Australia about what systems should be doing, there is little reason for companies to take that on. And if companies aren't taking that on, then there's no investment from industry into research.